Good afternoon, everyone. The date was March the 12th, 2005. The Living Church of God, one of the organizations that make up the Church of God community, was conducting morning services at the Sheraton Hotel Conference Room in Brookville, Wisconsin, where they had met regularly for the last 5 years. Approximately 60 people were in attendance at these Sabbath services. And one of the people attending those Sabbath services was a 44-year-old man by the name of Terry Ratzman. Approximately 20 minutes after services had started, Mr. Ratzman briefly left the room in which the services were being held. He returned a few minutes later, carrying a 9mm Beretta handgun, and fired 22 shots into the congregation of the Living Church of God, killing the minister and 6 others, including the minister's son. 4 others were wounded, 1 critically. Finally, Ratzman shot and killed himself midway through the second of 3 magazines that he had for his automatic Beretta handgun. As the police investigated the violent Sabbath morning services there in suburban Milwaukee, it appears that none of the congregation had any reason to suspect Terry Ratzman doing what he did. Matter of fact, they thought he was just like a regular member who came in to services that day. Friends and neighbors described Mr. Ratzman as a dedicated churchgoer, known for sharing homegrown vegetables with his neighbors. To say the least, this Living Church of God congregation was caught totally off guard to the events that transpired that Sabbath morning. They most certainly were not expecting the mass murder of members of their congregation. And of all times, Sabbath morning, when everybody is there as God has commanded, a holy convocation. But you see, that's where they made a fatal mistake. They were not expecting the unexpected. In this message today, I would like to highlight a principle that we all need to be reminded of in our fight against Satan the devil. And that principle is this: we need to be expecting the unexpected. Point number one that I would like for us to consider is this: Satan is at war against the people of God collectively. All of us together. Satan is at war against the people of God collectively, or you could say the church. Please turn with me to Revelation, the 12th chapter. We're going to start reading in verse 1. Revelation, the 12th chapter, verse 1. Now, the primary subject matter of Revelation 12 is a description of Satan's warfare against God's people, including Jesus Christ, the descendants of ancient Israel, and all true Christians today. Revelation 12 starts by taking us back to the birth of Jesus to show that the Messiah and God's chosen people were the main focus of what Satan's hatred and wrath was directed upon. It then moves us forward to that time when Christ will be returning the second time to set up the government of God here on this earth. Revelation 12 and 13 explain the devil's motivation and introduce the worldly powers he employs in his end-time battle against Christ and his servants, those of us sitting right here in this room today. And let's start reading now in Revelation, the 12th chapter, verse 1. Now a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a garland of 12 stars. Now this is all prophetic and it's symbolic, and we'll get into what some of these things mean here very shortly. Then being with child, she cried out in labor and in pain to give birth. And another sign appeared in the heaven. Behold, a great fiery red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 diadems on his heads. Verse 4. His tail drew a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was ready to give birth, to devour her child as soon as she was born. And if you can see right there, child in verse 4 and in verse 5 is capitalized. She bore a male child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up to God and his throne. Obviously, this is in reference to Jesus Christ. Then the woman fled into the wilderness, where she had a place prepared by God that they should feed her there 1,260 days. Now, in prophecy, and of course, Revelation does have a lot of prophecy here, a lot of symbolism that we can understand. Some of it's very difficult, but a lot of it we can understand. And here in chapter 12, we understand that the woman is in reference to the people of God, the church, you might say, chosen to be the light of the world. In contrast to that woman over in Revelation 17, which is the mother of harlots, still an organizational group of people, sort of like a church. That is one type of a woman which can be symbolized with those type of people. But what we're talking about here is us in this room, God's people. The imagery here recalls the ancestral history of ancient Israel. Whenever you look at it and you go back, for example, in Genesis, the 37th chapter, verses 9 through 10, this is where Joseph described one of the revelatory dreams to his family that he had had, where he said, "And thee said, look, I have dreamed another dream. At this time the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowed down to me." And so he told it to his father, Jacob or Israel, you know, that was another name for him, and his brothers. And his father rebuked him and said to him, "What is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come to bow down to the earth before you?" Well, that was a prophecy that did come to pass, because Joseph became Pharaoh's chief deputy in Egypt. His family did bow down before him, as the dream provided the revelation from God. Jacob, Joseph's father, quickly grasped the symbolism of Joseph's dream. The sun represented Jacob, the moon his wife, and the stars his son, 12 in all, counting Joseph. We also know, in other words, that this symbolism of Joseph's dream referred to Jacob's family, from which the ancient nation of Israel developed. The woman in Revelation 12, clothed with these same symbols, also represents Jacob's family, but it has now been expanded to a nation, God's chosen people of Israel. Now, many hundred years of time after Joseph, the Jews, the descendants of these tribes of Judah, Benjamin, and Levi, and the few remaining of the other tribes, were the only ones of the descendants in ancient Israel returning to Palestine. The mighty Roman Empire dominated them when the time came for Jesus, the Messiah, to be born there in this location of the Jewish nation. Remember what it says in Revelation 12:5 there we just read? She says, "She bore a male child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up to God in his throne." That's in reference to Jesus Christ. But we've got to remember that immediately after Christ's birth, that we saw in verse 4 there, Satan, symbolized by the dragon, stood before the woman who was ready to give birth to devour her child as soon as it was born. The Gospels record, if you go over to Matthew, the second chapter, starting in verses 13 down through 16, it shows where Herod, the Jews' Roman-appointed king, did his very best to destroy, to kill all of the young men, the young boys that were being born at that time. But the king didn't know that God had already spared Jesus by having his human parents take him to Egypt until Herod died. And so Jesus was never killed, although Herod wanted to do that. And of course, Satan was doing his best to kill Jesus because he knew the implications of Christ being born. You know, at this point in this presentation, I think that we can all say, well, you know, Larry, I understand all that. I have probably had sermon after sermon about the fact that, you know, this is God's church, and it started in the New Testament era of the church 2,000 years ago, and we know about Christ being, they wanted to kill him and all that, but he was taken out, so he did not have to go through that particular type of persecution. But the remember what I said in the SPS here, that the main focus of what I wanted to get across to us today is that we need to be expecting the unexpected. And who from? From Satan, who attacks the church. That's us. And that's what I'm trying to get us to focus in upon, is to be expecting the unexpected. I have a question for you. How many of you heard about the events that transpired in the Eagle Rock Church two Sabbaths ago? Very few, just a couple of us, maybe three or four. Well, it was an event that occurred during the sermon that was being given by Mr. John Garnett. Now, for those who have never been to the Eagle Rock Church building, probably most of you haven't, let me give you a general layout of the meeting hall. The lectern, for example, is similar to the setup we have right here. And the room, the back door that you can come in to the main entrance to the room, to this big room that they have, and their room is probably at least about another half a size larger than this room here that we're in right now. I know it extends a good deal further back, maybe to at least out to past the entrance doors to this room right here. And so people can come in through those doors, just like most of us here probably did today as you came into services here. You came in, sat down, you came through those doors right up there. Now, from the lectern right here, where Mr. John Garnett was speaking, to your left, my right, there is another door that people can come in to the main meeting hall. This fairly good sized door, because as you go out that door and down, there's sort of like a little hallway there, walkway you might say, because it's a little bit of open area where you go into the next building, and you can go right straight through the building, and it goes right out into the parking lot where most of the people do park as they come in. And so you can come in either from that direction or from this side door over here. And as you go out to the parking lot, on the left is some bathrooms. On the right is where they have their coffee room, like what we have over there. Now, as Mr. John Garnett was speaking, he was probably about, two-thirds of the way through his message. All of the people were there, you know, listening to what he had to say, you know, focusing upon the message that he was trying to get across, points that we needed to put into our lives. And as he was speaking, that's where the attention was focused for all the people in the congregation. But then, to the right, John's right, your left, some three individuals came in through that door. And they were kind of bolsters as they came through. And as they came through, it was a man, a woman, and another man. The man and the woman, the first man and woman through, were married. The other man coming through, people didn't really know who he was. He was sort of like a muscular type individual. But anyway, as they came through that door, they disrupted Mr. John Garnett as he spoke. And they started in yelling and screaming, and they said, well, you know, Mr. Garnett and Mr. Fish and Mr. Ralph Helge. You all know Ralph Helge. He's been here a couple of times. He said that you guys are false prophets. You need to repent. I won't go into all of the different things that they had to say. It's not necessary here. But what I'm trying to get across here is that people were caught off guard in the Garod Church. They weren't expecting that. If somebody went coming through that door right over there where Mr. Marchbanks is at, kind of walking and screaming right now, would you be expecting that? Well, of course not. Well, What happened was, whenever that occurred, Mr. Helge, who is 84 years of age, 85, something like that, he's not a spring chicken anymore. But anyway, he was right up on the ball, and because he normally sits back about where Mr. Carlisle is sitting in their room back there. He was already up and was coming up, and as he was coming up, he was getting a couple other of the young guys to come with him, and they all came up with him, and they went up, and out the door went all the dissidents. There was no problem whatsoever. There was about six big young guys along with Mr. Helge, and out the door they went, and so they're out there in the parking lot, and Mr. Helge is taking care of the situation. As you know, Mr. Helge was the lawyer for the Worldwide Church of God, and so he has a lot of input as to what the legal formalities can be and what can be said and where we stand legally. Now, as we think about that and what happened, it was obviously a wake-up call for the Eagle Rock Church. Not only for the Eagle Rock Church, because, you know, as you know, Mr. Weber is in charge of this church, San Diego and Bakersfield. And so we started in thinking, well, you know, if something like that can occur, and we know what happened in living in times past, we don't want the same thing to happen to us here in this service. We want protection. We want to do the best that we can to protect ourselves so we can have a good service. We want to be able to expect the unexpected. And so we did what we can. We've thought about this. We've all gotten together, the ordained officers of the church here in Redlands, and we've thought about what we should be doing. And there's a couple of things that we have done to enhance the security, to be able to handle situations like this that come up. And so I'd like to just kind of brief you so that we're all aware of what's going on, so we're all on the same page here as to what is happening with the security that we have. Now, we have three deacons here, and primarily Mr. Howard Marchbanks, who sits over on that side of the room, and he's right there at that door. So if anybody came in that was to be, you know, disrupting services, he's right there ready to take care of it. Now, in the very back there, Mr. Bob Carlisle always primarily sits in the very back there so he can look over the entire congregation and see what's going on. Something happens, you know, maybe somebody gets sick, maybe somebody passes out, maybe somebody pulls out a 9 Beretta gun, I don't know. But anyway, Mr. Carlisle is generally back there, and so he's primarily watching what's going on if anything happens in the back of the room. Mr. Dave Hall generally always sits over here, so he could handle anybody coming through that door right there. But what we're doing is that some of the setup people, whoever's doing the setup for that day, we're going to make sure that one of them is in the very back. And as you can see, Mr. Hall is not sitting here today. He's in the very back because he's back there watching to make sure out in the parking lot, you know, if somebody is coming across at this point in time. If there's somebody coming across now to services and we don't really know who they are, well, wait a minute. You're not coming into these services. These are private services, and you must come here by invitation. You just can't come here because you want to. You know, no, you got to come through Mr. Weber or so, well, at least one of us to figure out and make sure that it's okay for you to come. Now, I know that most of us here know our deacons, and we know that these are the men who are going to be responsible for handling any situation that comes up. Now, I would just like these three deacons, Mr. Dave Hall, please raise your hand. He's in the very back of the room there. Mr. Bob Carlisle and Mr. Howard Marchbanks. I'm sure that you know these men. And so what happens if anything comes up? These are the men that we rely upon to handle the situation. Not you guys. Don't get started on your own. Now, if one of them says, Mr. Bill Lucenite, here, help me get this guy down, well, then fine. That's a different story, you know. Bill's about 6'10", and he can handle most of those guys. We might need a big guy like him. But anyway, the bottom line is, that's what we're trying to do, is to make it safer so we can all have a good Sabbath service here in Redlands. Now, those are the men that are going to be handling the situations right off the bat. But you know, the thing is, we can all help. Matter of fact, there's somebody coming in. Yeah, you better check them there, Mr. Hall. We don't want them coming in. Our services may not be people we want here. But anyway, we ourselves can help make sure that Sabbath services are going to run smoothly for all of us. Now, how do we go about doing it? Number one, start by asking for God's protection for all of our members as we travel back and forth from our home for Sabbath services. Also, protection for our homes while we're at services. You don't want to be here in Sabbath services and then go home, and as you're walking up the pathway to your front door, somebody's kicked it in and made off with all your valuables. We don't want to see that. And you know what? In Exodus, the 34th chapter, verses 21 through 24, God says whenever you go for Sabbath services, it also talks about the holy days, but it starts off with Sabbath services. He said, I will make sure I'll set the holy angels around your property so that no man wants to go in there and steal from you. So that's something that we need to do. We need to ask for God's protection for all of the people coming to services. Then we need to ask for God's protection during services. Remember what happened to the Living Church of God? I'll bet you when Terry Ratman pulled out that 9mm Beretta, there was a lot of people who was probably praying at that time, but we need to pray before then and we ask for God's protection. And you know what? Not only just for our protection, we should also be asking God to inspire the messages that we are going to be hearing, that are going to be presented. Why waste your time coming here just to sit here and do nothing and then walk away that Sabbath and nothing to apply in your life for the coming week? That's a waste of your time. Don't let that happen. Put it on your prayer list. I already had Mr. Howard Marchbanks there on my prayer list. He and I talked yesterday. We had an idea what we're going to be talking about today. I had him on my prayer list. I hope that you did too. I never let a Sabbath go by that I don't start it off by asking for God's protection for us back and forth to services, that God protects our belongings while we're gone, and that we'll have inspirational messages while we're here at services. That's something we should all be doing. If you see something strange going on before, in, or after services, tell it to the ordained officers of the church. I just got through having them raise their hand. You know who they are. Let them handle the situation. You go tell them. Let them do it. We've talked about that. We know how to go about handling it. It may be that if the need arises, they may ask you, call 911 while I talk to this individual. Do you have your phone ready to go? Do you know what the address is? Do you know what the name of this building is? What are the crossroads out here? Have you heard about New Jersey? When I say strange, I do not mean just, you know, strange physical appearance or physical actions. That can be part of it. Yes, that's certainly something that we should be watching for. If some guy walks in and sets some flowers down right here, and the flowers are going tick, 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 tick. Let's get rid of the flowers. Oh, Bob, you can handle the flowers, can't you? Okay, thank you. As a sidebar here, that individual in Eagle Rock, when that incident was going on, talking about strange things that were sort of like going on, he would go up to people and say, let me hold your hands, and he'd put your hands, his hands on, let me pray for you. Ladies, if some of the guys come around and say, oh, well, I'd like to pray for you over here in the corner. Don't do it, okay? Man or woman, we do not need that kind of a situation. That's not something that goes on. The people that need to be laying on hands is either Mr. Barr or myself. If you ask for hands to be laid on you in the anointing room. But things can happen that we need to be aware of. We need to be watching. I remember this was years ago in another church that my wife and I were attending. One of the young guys came up to me and he says, you know what? You know what the girls are doing out in the lobby? I said, no, what are the girls doing? Well, they can take just four little girls, with one finger, they can lift a guy totally up out of the chair. I said, what do you mean? He said, there'll be one girl that'll put the one finger underneath the knee right here, and another little girl over here, and they'd put it there. And then on the elbow, there'd be one with the finger right here, and they would say, okay, up you come, and they could raise him up with just one finger. I said, I'd better see that. So I went out, and you know what? They were doing it. I couldn't believe it. I said, what are you kids doing? Do you think that 180-pound young man right there, that you can lift him up with just you and your finger? What are you thinking? Anyway, that was corrected. I had a little Bible study for the next half hour. You know, there's all sorts of stuff. I don't know if you guys have heard just recently on the news about where this Catholic priest had to go in and do an exorcism of get the demons out of some little boy. There were five different witnesses. One was even a nurse that was just coming in to help out the family, saw this little boy walk up the walls backwards. Things like this are beginning to, you know, crop up in the news. Remember, at the end time, there's going to be more signs and wonders that are going to be performed, deceiving people. That's going to happen. Now, I don't know when Christ is going to return. I don't know when tribulation will start. I thought it was going to start 45 years ago, but it hadn't started yet. But I know one thing, it's getting close. It's a lot closer, right, Bill? That's what we need to be aware of. But you know, if you do see something strange going on in services and you see somebody doing something, especially if they are going against the doctrine of the church, anybody that comes to you and says, you know, that that maybe you don't have to keep the Sabbath. There was an individual here just recently that was going around telling people here in our congregation, you don't have to keep the Sabbath. Mr. Carlisle caught the individual telling that to an individual. One of our people, he corrected it. And then Mr. Carlisle and Mr. Fred Richardson, and I got the guy over here in the corner, and I told him again, I says, don't you ever do that again. I says, don't come in here going against our doctrine. That's just not the way it is. Now, it's all right if you have some ideas and you want to discuss them. That's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But when you try to change church doctrine and say, oh, you don't have to do this or that or the other, when the church is clearly teaching that's the way you're supposed to be doing something, that's wrong. We're going to put a stop to that. You know, the guy walked right straight from in the corner there, went around, and was telling other people. Once again, I just got through telling him. I said, don't say that, and he did it anyway. I found out about it the next Sabbath. Anyway, Mr. Dave Hall and I took care of that, along with Mr. Fred Richardson. We met the guy back there, and we told him, I said, you're not welcome in services. Don't come back. Now, I don't like to do things like that, but I'm not going to let somebody come in here and corrupt our people. That's just not going to be something that's going to be done. Anyway, he went around, long story short, he was going to come in anyway. And I told him, I says, no, you're not. I had Dave Hall backing me up, so I wasn't too afraid. Besides, he's only about that tall. I figured I'd whip him. But anyway, the bottom line was, he's not going to come in here and spread disruption in our services. Not going to happen. I know one thing, when he was going way down the other side over there, he says, you better call the police next time because there's going to be trouble. What's he going to do? Come in here with a gun, take a shot at me? I don't know. But anyway, one thing is, you need to let our ordained officers of the church handle these situations. Now, you got to remember this. Satan is out to persecute the church as a whole. That's from the overall perspective. But we need to realize the church is made up of us, individuals. Which brings us to point number two. Point number two is this. Satan is at war against the people of God individually. Satan is at war against the people of God individually. Not just the church in an overall sense, but each of us individually. Let's continue on here in Revelation, the 12th chapter, verse 7. And war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought. But they didn't prevail, nor was there a place found for them in heaven any longer. And so the great dragon was cast out, and the serpent of old called the devil Satan, and deceives the whole world, and he is cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. Now, as he is cast out, though, what does he do? In verse 13, and when the dragon saw that he had been cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. But the woman was given two wings of great angel, that she might fly into the wilderness to her place where she is nourished for times, times and a half a time. Now, this times, times and a half a time, this right here is an actual 3.5 years. The one over in Revelation 12, verse 6, that 3.5 years that it was talking about, the 1,260 days, actually that is one day for a year principle. Remember one thing, whenever Christ was being persecuted there in Palestine, all of God's people right there, God wanted his people to go spread out to proclaim the gospel around the world. And so God protected his people for hundreds of years as they went out to do their job. But here in verse 14, this is talking about that last 3.5 years before Christ returns to set up the government of God here on this earth. It says, and the serpent spewed water out of his mouth in verse 15, like a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. But the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. And the dragon was enraged with the woman. Now remember, woman is symbolic of church, and church, that's us. And he went to make war with the rest of her offspring, that's us individually in the church, who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. You know, there are gobs of scriptures that we could use, and you've probably heard of them many, many times, about how Satan is after us, after he's trying to persecute us. Just let me kind of give you just a few, for example. In Matthew, the 5th chapter, verses 10 through 12, you don't have to turn there because we don't have that much time. I would just like to briefly highlight a few of these scriptures. There's gobs of them, and you probably have your own personal ones that you like, helping you to overcome the persecution from Satan. It says there, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteous sake. That's us. For theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when they revile you and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Now, in John, the 15th chapter, verses 19 through 20, let me read that one for you too. If you were of the world would love his own. Yet because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Satan hates you. I've said that numerous times. Satan doesn't like anyone in this room. He hates every one of us. Why? Because we're going to be above him. Remember the word that I said to you, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, Jesus said, if they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. And if they kept my word, they will also keep yours also. And the one that I think probably a lot of us always remember is 1 Peter, the 5th chapter, verses 8 through 11. It says, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the one who is against you individually, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Resist him, steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the world. But by may the God of all grace, who called us into his eternal glory by Jesus Christ, after you have suffered a while, yes, we're all going to suffer. Is there anybody in this room that has not suffered to a certain extent? If you haven't, boy, you're lucky. Anyway, perfect, establish, strengthen, and settle you. To him be the glory and dominion forever and ever. Amen. Now, I think we can all understand that Satan is out there to persecute us. There's gobs of scriptures that say that. But that persecution will not come in a way that we're looking for. It never seems to fail. Satan doesn't persecute you in the areas that he knows you're the strongest in. You know, I don't know what that area is. My wife and I took a little trip. We went up to Chansky's nice place. It's a gambling casino. We went up there to because they have nice rooms in the area, probably the nicest is in the area. And from there, then we go out into the national parks, and we just have a good time. But you see, I don't go up there to gamble to make money for myself, because Satan knows I could care less about that. That's not a problem with me. Gambling is not my big forte. I don't have to worry about it. So Satan is not going to hit me on it. I could go down there, be walking by all those machines and the little girls at the table. Yeah, Satan, try to get me to gamble my money away. It's not going to work. He's not going to get after me that way. But then I'm out there on the street and I'm driving my 600 horsepower Corvette, and he's saying, "Hey, go ahead. You can beat that guy. You can outrun him." "Oh, you bet I can." Wrong. You see, this is where Satan is after us. Point number three, then, is we need to expect the unexpected. We need to expect the unexpected. Turn with me to Luke, the 12th chapter. Luke, the 12th chapter. We're going to read verses 35 through 48. There's a lot of scriptures that we could use to prove this point. I like this one here because it talks about both good servants and bad servants. I know as we think about it, I always like to look at myself as being the good servant, right? That's all of us in this room. That's just natural, common way that human beings look at it. Oh, I'm not to blame. It's somebody else that's to blame. I'm the good servant. Gordon Barr, he's that bad servant. Yeah, I know. Hey, he's the one. Couldn't be me. In Luke, the 12th chapter, let's go down to verse 35. It says, "Let your waist be girdled and your lamps burning, and you yourselves be like men who wait for the master when he will return from the wedding, that when he comes and knocks, they may open to him immediately. Blessed are those servants whom the master, when he comes, will find watching. Assuredly, I say to you that he will gird himself and will sit down to eat and will come and serve them. And if he should come in the second watch, or if he comes in the third watch, to find them so, blessed are those servants. For know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched. He would have been expecting him to come." You know, the police call you up and say, "Hey, you know, you're going to have a robber at 1 p.m. at night. Okay, I'm going to be here with my .357 Magnum, and when he walks through that door, I'm going to blow his head off." No, that's not what I'm saying. But anyway, the bottom line is this. If we had known, you see, when that thief was coming, well, then we would have been watching for him. But he says, we would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. But that's the way thieves are. They don't tell you when they're coming. You can't expect them to be there at a certain time. It says, therefore, in verse 40, "Therefore you also be ready, for the Son of Man has come in an hour when you don't expect him." And that's what happens with Satan. He'll hit us when we're not expecting it. We need to be expecting it. And Peter said, "Oh, wait a minute, Christ, what are you talking about here?" Remember, this is Christ talking privately to his own people. That's us in this room. Then Peter said to him, "Lord, do you speak this parable only to us or to all the people?" Verse 42, and then Jesus answered and said, "Who is then that faithful and wise servant whom his master will make ruler over his household to give him their portion of food in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his master will find so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you that he will make him ruler over all that he has. But if that master says in his heart, 'Oh, you know, my master is delaying his coming,' and begins to beat the male and female servants and to eat and drink and be drunk, and the master's servant will come on a day when he is not looking for him, at an hour when he is not aware," he's not expecting it, you see, "and he will cut him in two and appoint him his portion with the unbelievers. And that servant who knew his master's will and did not prepare himself to do according to his will be beaten with many stripes." So, one of the many points that we can glean out of those verses, and there's a lot that we can glean out of there, I just hit the top layer, is that we need to be on guard for the unexpected. When we're not aware of it, that's when it will hit us. When Terry Ratzman walked into Sabbath services being conducted by the Living Church of God, no one was expecting him to go off the deep end mentally and start killing members of the congregation. They had grown lax in how our adversary, as a roaring lion, is out to devour anyone he can. We need to keep the following points in mind so that we don't fall prey to those kind of such attacks. Point number one, Satan is at war against the people of God collective. That's the church. Satan will attack whatever church group you're in at the moment. Matter of fact, it wasn't that long ago. Remember, we had an attack where about half of our membership left. It was shortly after that, Living had another attack by Satan, where a number of the ministers left, and there was another split. And David Hume just had another one here just recently, where I think he disfellowshipped something like 9 of his ministers, half of his congregation went another way. That's just the way it is. Satan is after us. He is going to attack the church. If you don't think that he is not going to do that, oh, well, you know, Satan's not going to touch Living anymore. You know, we're pretty good shape. We don't have to worry about it. Right now, we have peace and safety. Things are going along pretty smooth for us right now. Do you think that that is going to continue for the next 20, 30 years? I hope not. Not only does Satan collectively attack the church, but he attacks us individually, as point number two is brought out. We have to understand that. And whatever that way is that Satan attacks us, he will do it. And he knows what button to push. It's not going to be this button over here that you can handle. It'll be that button that you can't handle. So be prepared for it. That is point number three. We need to expect the unexpected. The attacks will be coming, and probably not from the direction that we're expecting. Now, I hope that what I have presented here for you today makes everybody feel a little bit more comfortable about coming to church services, that we're doing the best that we can to provide a safe environment, that I've given you some helpful hints on how to have a better service for us when we come here. You know, put it on your prayer list. Do you think Mr. Marchbanks and I went to school to learn how to speak in front of people? No. We do it because God speaks through us. That's the only reason we even get a point across. Let's make sure that we ask for God's protection throughout this coming week, both in our private lives and while we're here at Sabbath services. Thank you for coming today. Have a good Sabbath.